The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy Morgan. Russ, you know, they say it's not all rainbows and unicorns, but today it is.
Today's rainbow and unicorns?
Today is full of unicorns, at least 100 to be exact, because today I just purchased an online business called 100unicorns.com.
100unicorns.com.
I'm just laughing at myself right now. Like the fact that I'm even having this conversation, talking about a business called 100 Unicorns. I mean, is this bizarre to you?
No, well, it's not bizarre, right, Joe? You always tend to amaze me with your actions. And this is another one. So what prompted you to buy 100unicorns.com?
Well, so Justin in our office, he shared with me this site that sells online businesses.
Okay.
And this was one of them. And he's like, look at this. Isn't this so funny? Like, look at this. This business is for sale. Who would even create something like this? And I was like, how much they want for it?
No, he didn't. He was like making fun of it. You're like, oh, this is like a brilliant business idea.
Well, I mean, it's a niche, right? Who doesn't like unicorns nowadays that has 5 daughters? Or am I the only one?
Oh my goodness. Man, but this is amazing. So what do you plan to do with this business?
All right. So bottom line is we're about educating our children. I want my daughters to be entrepreneurs. I want them to learn. And that's like, man, this is a small price to pay to get something in place. It's actually already making money. It's been around for a couple of years. And I'm thinking, well, why don't I just use this as a way to teach them how to run a business? We can talk about how much things cost, what the markups are, what the process of customer service looks like. I mean, there's so many potential applications here. I'm just like, even if I lose everything, like if it just totally went bankrupt, it would be worth just the learning opportunity.
That's a good project, right? I mean, homeschool parents, we're always teaching. So this is really more, if you got back any of the money, it would be cheaper than some of the projects people go spend money on in order to learn. So I think that's a good idea.
I mean, it's like buying a course, but yeah, it's actually has a potential for a profit.
Now, do you have to stock unicorns in your basement or what do you have to do with this?
Nope. This is a dropship business. Okay. So I'm just basically connecting buyers to the actual products. And so anyways, I know that's about all I know at this point. So this is the very first step in the process. You're going to want to tune in because I'm going to give you updates along the way. And by the way, you need to probably buy some products for your daughters, wives, girlfriends, whatever it is. So go to 100unicorns.com and check it out.
Buy something for the love. Buy something for this guy. We need to have at least one sale from 100unicorns.com. All right, so we're going to move on from that sponsorship onto our show today. And today we're interviewing Tao Simpson. You may have heard him in the past. He did an interview with us where he talked about the 5 profit centers of real estate. This is someone that we've gotten to know over the last year and a half or so. He was a corporate attorney. Was somebody who was really passionate about getting out of his job, his day-to-day job. So much so, Joey, that he bought over 60 rental properties in a little less than 2 years.
Isn't that amazing? by the way, like to go from zero to over 60 properties in less than 2 years.
That's amazing. It's like crazy. That's
getting after it.
But when you're focused, you're driven, right? You start learning everything you need to know about it and you start going after it. So he talks about on this episode, something else he learned about too.
Yeah. The infinite banking concept as the baseline for real estate investment. And it's so shocking to me because we hear this all the time. Real estate investors just click when they hear about infinite banking. It's kind of like if they had heard about infinite banking first, they would have done it. But sometimes they've been investing in real estate. Then they hear about it, they're like, these things are just like cousins, right?
Yeah. They go together like rainbows and unicorns, right?
Rainbows and unicorns. Exactly. That's the reason why we brought that up.
Gotcha. Yeah. We're exactly. Making the connection, trying to always make the connection. But I love this interview because one, he gets to just tell a story, how he learned about it. What were some of the challenges he faced? You may be going through some of these same questions as you're looking into doing this yourself, or maybe you're trying to share this with a friend and somebody else's story is always helpful to let them hear as well.
Yeah. So we constantly hear from you that help us understand how people are using this. What was their steps that they took? How can I then learn from their experience? So this is a great friend, a great interview, and I don't want you to miss out on this. Let's go ahead and jump into this interview with Tao Simpson.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these five pillars that you're talking about, but how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible, so you may want to write this down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com, and you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
Welcome. We have Tao Simpson as our guest. He's back for a second interview. You were so excited to hear more about him. We had to bring him back on. So welcome to the show, Tao.
Thanks for having me back.
So that wasn't quite as awkward as the first time, right?
No, it wasn't. You're getting better.
I'm working on my skills here.
It's only been 100 and something episodes. His ability to intro and get people into the show has gotten less awkward as we go. All right. So Tao, last time we talked about some really interesting profit centers that real estate has, but I think what most people want to hear is, how did you get there? What was the story behind the story? So I'd love to hear how you got to learning about using infinite banking as a tool and what led you to real estate as a passion. And then I also want to hear a little bit more about, you know, what's been happening in your W-2 job and leading to real estate as a full-time venture. So tell me about how you heard about infinite banking for the first time.
It was actually through a real estate connection. Not surprising. There's a lot of overlap, kind of the alternative financial world, if you will, the world y'all operate in. I was having coffee with a guy who's now a friend of mine. He hit me up on Bigger Pockets. So I'd already been buying some rental houses and he saw that we were in the same area. So let's get coffee. And we were just talking about real estate. And he said, have you heard of infinite banking? And, you know, 24 hours after that, I had listened to like every podcast I could find on infinite banking. So that's how it happened. And I just kind of just made sense to me immediately. I didn't know. There's a lot of, as y'all know, like to truly master an understanding, it takes a while to a lot of reading. I didn't know who Nelson Nash was at that point. But I soon thereafter got the book, started reading. It took probably a few months for me to wrap my head around it. And it was y'all's podcast. I don't remember which one it was, but that was the podcast that my friend said, listen to this podcast. They're in Birmingham. So started that. And I don't remember how long it was before I called, and now sitting here in Russ's office talking about policy.
So all right, you said something that I don't want to miss. Immediately made sense. Why is that? Well, what is it about being a real estate investor, hearing about infinite banking, and it just immediately connected? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, you are. well, I guess it is. There are a lot of similarities. It is you got to think long term, and there's something about like the control and ownership of your wealth through that vehicle. You know, real estate is something that, you know, you buy and it's not immediately, you know, it's not a liquid asset, but you own it and control it, and it grows with time, and it's real. It's something that is not going to go out of style, or, you know, if, you know, markets can fluctuate, but it's not something that's just going to be artificially inflated to the point that we see, like, in the paper markets and crash. And it's just something about, I think it really comes down to kind of the control of owning a properly designed life insurance policy that really spoke to me. And I mean, you can't ignore, like, the compound interest for the rest of your life. Like, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a little side of that.
I would say sometimes what I hear, you know, one of the first objections or complaints is, but it takes me a while, right? So if I put a dollar in this insurance policy before I borrow it out, I don't have my full dollar, and I want to get investing in real estate, because the reason you were looking into real estate, correct me if I'm wrong, is so that you could get out of the rat race, so you could leave your W-2 job.
Yeah. And that it really just started with, I need to, you know, really diversify the stuff I was putting my money into.
Explain that.
Up until, I'm now totally out of the stock market. But up until the point, so this is 2 years ago, by the way. Yeah. 2 years ago, I had zero rental properties.
Zero rental properties, zero life insurance policies, 100% in the stock market.
Yeah, we had, at least we had Roth accounts.
Okay.
So we had done that part right. But we had, you know, we're in our late 30s. So, you know, the so-called experts say, oh, you should be in like 90% stock. And, you know, so it'll fluctuate, but over time it'll go up. So that's what we had. And we had a brokerage account with, like, we just put cash into the stock market as well. But I never really felt good about it. I just didn't know the alternatives out there. But I started, you know, it was really when I made a career change. I was with a big law firm that I was just, like, looking back, I was just grinding in a tunnel, like, not really thinking, you know, not really thinking using my head. I was just kind of, like, going along. I didn't put enough attention or effort. So I was just, whatever the top Google result on, like, how do you invest? Like, okay, well, that's what most people are doing. I didn't really think much about it.
Which is not too different from most, right? I think that we get going in our jobs. We're going 100 miles an hour. We get home at 6 o'clock. We eat dinner with the kids. We try our best to spend a little time with our family. We put our head on the pillow. We wake up and we're back at work again. Where is there time? You know, when there is time, it's like, how do I find, you know, time to take the kids to go do something? Or how do I spend time with my husband or my wife or whatever it may be? Where do we have time to figure that out? So I think a lot of people would say, that's me. I check the three boxes that everybody else around me is doing.
And that's what we had been doing. And really it was my wife who had the initial spark. It's kind of ironic, and she might, some days she might wish she could take it back. She's like, we should look at real estate. And I was like, okay, I'll get on that. So I just kind of dove in. I've always been kind of a numbers guy. Like, math was always my strongest subject. And so it clicked with me. And then I was like, oh, well, this is really not too complicated. Let's get some rental properties, and got a few and kept learning. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool.
So let me ask you a question about that. You said, I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, when they hear about infinite banking, so real estate is pretty cut and dry. It's pretty easy to come up with the numbers, right? But when people hear about infinite banking, they hear about life insurance, their immediate reaction is, oh, that's not a good investment. It doesn't make sense. I can invest somewhere else, make better sense. So they might just go to real estate.
Yeah.
Why, as a numbers guy, did it make sense to use a policy to then continue to expand your real estate portfolio?
Part of it was, like, when you factor in risk, like, you know, like, getting a 4 or 5% return is not sexy. Like, it wasn't that, like, oh, I'm going to, oh, I'm going to, like, double my money next year. No, it was like, well, there's, like, I mean, pretty much zero risk. I mean, is that pretty safe to say? And steady, predictable growth that only gets better, over time. So it wasn't, I don't think that you're going to get, like, if you just put all your money in life insurance and didn't use it the way that y'all teach your clients to, you know, borrow from the life insurance policy, from the life insurance company, and use that to invest or to buy whatever you're going to buy. If you just stick all your money in, you're not going to get rich anytime soon doing that.
Yeah. I mean, the rule of 72 is going to take you 20 something years, yeah, right, to be doubling, right, your money, which is great, because most people don't realize that there is a use of, yeah, this tool. That we're talking about the utilization of the cash. I was just talking to some advisors the other day. We were in this conversation, and they kept coming back to, well, if they put their money in this insurance policy, then they won't be able to do this private lending transaction, or they won't be able to do, yeah, this real estate transaction. They never got the fact that, no, we do both, right? So, yeah, have you ever felt during this process that you were only doing one thing? You were only doing the life insurance? And if not, tell us why not.
No, definitely not. I mean, I guess if I kind of take myself back, when it clicked to me was like, oh, it's a savings account.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's a savings account. And then the process of using it and paying it back is really just cash flow management.
So tell me, can we walk through a couple of deals of where you've used, yeah, it and how you paid it back? Let's talk about ease of transactions. Yeah. Like, how has that process been?
Yeah, so we have, so the main business, that the rental property business, is in an LLC, and I've got a partner for that. But my wife and I have a couple of rental properties just in our own personal name. And those are really the ones that I've used, as far as like investing capital, yeah, into it. Those are the ones I've used my policy for. And so the company that I use, I mean, it takes a few days, but I go online and I sync it up with my bank account and do an electronic transfer. They just say, like, how much do you want? And obviously you can't borrow more than your cash value, so, right, that's a limiting factor.
Like most people's check-ins account.
Right, right. Just like anything else you can put your money in.
Yeah.
And it appears in a few days, electronically transferred. And so I use those for down payments. And now it's really maybe more like quarterly, I will let the cash flow stack up from those rentals, and then I'll just transfer it back as a policy loan repayment. And I see that balance get the loan balance get knocked down over time. Meanwhile, like every now and then I check back in, and like my cash value's like grown by, you know, like, oh, $812.42 more than I had, you know, a couple months ago or whatever it was.
Right.
So I see the cash value growing, and I've, you know, knocking down the loan balance. And I use the cash flow from the assets that I borrowed money to put into, if that makes, yeah, sense.
Well, and a lot of times we've heard real estate investors kind of compare the cash values and the loan mechanism as kind of an equity line. Mm-hmm. It's just a line of credit.
It is a line of credit.
That allows you to go buy the real estate, and as the cash flow is coming back in until you need to redeploy it, all you're doing is you're repaying the quote unquote loan at the insurance company. But really, all you're doing is just paying down on your line of credit, increasing your access to it, right? And, yep, then, and as you make more premium payments, you're increasing the limit on the credit line. All of these things. Would you say that's a fair comparison?
Yeah, and actually, that reminds me. I did. I have a couple times. So in the LLC, the business, our strategy for the most part, we bought some quote unquote turnkeys, but we've done kind of the burst strategy, where we'll find a kind of a beat up property that's way undervalued, buy it for cash, fix it up for cash, and then we'll go get a bank loan on it. And I've used my credit line, like I've let the business borrow from me and like pay me, you know, 9 or 10%, kind of a hard money interest rate loan. So I'm actually using my insurance policy to cash flow from the business that I'm using to buy rental properties. And then when we cash out with the bank, I'll pay myself back.
That's awesome. All right, so let's talk about real estate. Just so if you haven't listened to the previous episode that Pal did on the five profit centers of real estate,
How many rental properties do you own now? You said you got into real estate 2 years ago with zero. How many do you own both personally and in your partnership?
Let's see. It's changing on a daily basis. It's about 70, might be like 68 or 69, and a few under contract. So like a month from now, it probably would be like 82 or something.
Wow. And are these mostly just single family?
Mostly single family. We have a 4-unit apartment complex, and we're buying a 12-unit
cool
right now as well.
So you're playing Monopoly now. You're trading out four houses for the red hotel.
Yeah. Eventually, maybe it'll be a hotel.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're multiplying the same. But I mean, that's a pretty fast pace. I mean, 2 years, you've gone to 60 something houses, potentially about to go to 80 something houses. That's playing at a pretty fast pace. How, talk about, you know, let's go back to your corporate attorney. You're doing well. Your wife is a business owner. She tells you to look into real estate, and you're like, okay, I like numbers. This sounds fun to me. But as you started looking into that, why go to 60 something properties? What was the major driving motivation there?
Well, a lot of these are pretty cheap houses. Let's put that out on the table.
We're not buying Joey's houses over here.
No, certainly not.
Okay.
Certainly not.
It's not for sale.
You've done enough moving, right?
Yeah. Well, we're not even in our new house yet. So
he's a renter right now.
I'm actually renting right now. Might be one of yours. I don't even
know. I don't think so. No,
okay. Pretty confident. Pretty confident your family's not in one of these houses.
For one, you got too many kids.
Yeah.
So
I don't need the application process.
So we're here in Birmingham. It's a great cash flow market. So that was the play from the beginning. Let's invest for cash flow. And you know, the lower end properties cash flow even better. There are, you know, a whole host of other issues that you have to balance. Your tenants don't have as much money, so the likelihood of default is higher, and you know, usually these are older, smaller houses, et cetera, et cetera.
So when you say that, I want to keep breaking this down, because I'm listening and I'm saying, okay, there's definitely these different, I hear A, B, C properties, right? Yeah. Would you say you guys are in a C property?
We've got a lot of Class C. Lately, we've been trying to buy a little bit nicer. We've got some Class B in there.
Okay.
And actually, the two houses that Lindsay and I own outside of the business are in Class A areas there.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so.
And when you say I'm investing for cash flow, that means the amount of money that's over and above all the expenses that you have in. Is there a typical dollar number per size house, or what's a good number for you?
Yeah, so if you looked at our portfolio on average, it's about, I mean, if you can be like $200 a month per door, that would be really good. We might even be a little bit under that, because a lot of our houses rent for like $650 a month or something. But it's about, if you take out all the expenses, including, you know, allocating, you know, something's going to break, you need to just have some capital reserves in there. So if you take those out and everything, and then you pay the debt, we're about $2,000 to $2,500 per year per unit.
Okay.
For the cash flow.
So for those doing math at home, that's a little somewhere between $13,000 to $14,000 a month of free cash flow on 60 something units.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
Okay. All right. So now you're starting to see the signs. I know in the last time you said, look, I'm a capitalist. I did the math. I started seeing that there was actually a lot of fun money into real estate. Yeah. And your corporate attorney loving your job every single day that you go to work. And you thought, I could just do this on the side and help pay for the fun Disney trips.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, that's how it started. First, we started looking at, you know, like my paradigm at the time was like, oh, well, $200,000 house or whatever, which, you know, those can be good investments too. But just doing the math, I was like, oh, that's not very much. Like, that's going to take all my capital and not much cash flow. So we started looking at cheaper properties, and we kind of, you know, the way we could mitigate that risk is we're investing in our backyard. So I could start learning the neighborhoods across the Birmingham area. I'm like, okay, well, this is actually not that bad of an area, but the prices are about the same as the war zone
yeah,
a mile down the street. This is a good area. So we were, you know, selective, somewhat at least, in the assets we were buying. So our initial out of the gate that we kind of had, I think, thinking back, we were aiming for like $250,000 worth of property. We're like, let's get seven instead of like one nice house. Let's get seven. And we found it took a while to find a bank that would give us a loan for.
He was buying all the Baltic properties on the game board.
Yeah.
For those who are more
Baltic and Mediterranean.
Is that the dark purple? The very first ones.
Yeah, that's the first ones. I mean, it's the utility property, right?
Yeah.
But that, it makes sense. I mean, you land on those, you pay rent, and there's cash flow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that worked. We found a bank, again, like a local bank that gives commercial loan on it and said, we'll do a couple more. So like, sweet, let's go find some more. So then we found an older gentleman who had a bunch of rental properties. He was getting up in age and he's wanted out. So we just bought, he had eight of them. So we bought all eight of them at one time and did a loan on those. And then after that, we started kind of, you know, this whole time I'm reading and podcasting and actually trying to learn to know what I'm doing as I'm doing it. And so then we're like, all right, well, then I kind of learned the BRRRR strategy. Let's go find some foreclosures that are junky, but are in a decent area and fix them up. And so we've just kind of, I don't know, it hasn't necessarily been one like unified strategy. It's like where find the value
and take advantage of it. We've talked about this concept on the podcast several times, the reticular activating system. That's that little part in your brain that brings up or doesn't filter out the information that you really are saying is important to you.
Yeah.
So how have you seen that play out in your life where as you started focusing on real estate and started looking for deals, how many more deals did you start seeing and opportunities started coming?
Yeah. I mean, there's way more than I could possibly hope to buy. I mean, it's kind of once you learn what works and, you know, we had some good factors working for us. Like you said, I had a corporate career for a while. We had some savings. I had access to capital. You know, I had a great credit profile according to the bank. So like, yeah, if you guarantee the loan, we'll loan you however much you want. And I had a partner in a similar situation. So we did have some advantages, but so we were able to take advantage of the opportunities, but it was like, once I kind of learned the formula, like, all right, this is what a good deal looks like. And just all the various, you know, considerations that go into buying something. I started looking around just Birmingham. I'm like, oh, well, they're everywhere. And so now we're a little more selective, but I mean, you really, we're just in a great market that helps a lot. But yeah, to your point, like, okay, well, so here's kind of some criteria. I'm like, man, this criteria is everywhere.
Yeah.
We know how to do it. We've got, you know, got a property manager now, and we've got some bankers that are willing to lend to us. We've got kind of our general strategy. We've got kind of things in place. Let's just go.
So one of the big things was that you're building this towards, all right, how do I create this cash flow? And then once it got to a certain point, you started thinking, maybe I don't need to do the corporate attorney job full time, right?
Yep.
So where did that happen?
Well, in my head, it happened pretty quickly.
So when did it happen in your wife's head?
Very recently. probably, I mean, a few months ago. She finally was like, clearly she wants her husband to be happy and like doing something he loves. And she like, you know, I was telling her on like, hey, you know, you've been doing the like full-time mom and full-time business owner thing for years. And I've been going to the office and, as she would sometimes say, like getting to hang out with your buddies at work, which is not,
nobody's ever heard that.
Yeah. Which is not inaccurate. I mean, that is doing.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, I'm going to be like, you know, in your shoes. We can, if we're, as a real estate investor, I can, you know, go cover carpool and all the other things that you know, you don't really, you have no business trying to do all of this by yourself. Let me help. And so
that
I think
was
that
the carrot you threw out.
I suspect that's, you know, as much as anything.
Hey, this is really about,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, my freedom from this soul crushing job is really about you. Yeah. Like, you know, that's what it took.
Yeah.
But there's some, internally, she had some question marks. Like, you have a very stable job, I'm sure has benefits that gives us paychecks. Cause when you're a business owner, your pay is never really super consistent. I'm sure she's been successful, but it is never like as good as you always have this question mark. Cause you remember back to when you first started and it was bad.
Yeah.
And you go, I can always go back to that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure she was trying to answer some of those question marks inside.
Yeah. I mean, and she says that, especially her industry, she does corporate event planning and is, it's a very it's actually a very big industry, but it's pretty specialized. She helps, I mean, she'll like help a corporation understand that they need an incentive program, help them build it, like strategize about how to market that to your employees to get sales up to, and like, she'll do the whole thing. And she was kind of forced into starting her own business in 2008, because I don't know if y'all heard, but the economy was pretty bad back then.
Yeah.
And corporations were like, all right, no more incentive trips. That doesn't look good.
I'll go look that up. I'm gonna Google that after this.
So she, in her head, she's like, well, you know, like, it could disappear tomorrow. Now, she's so good at what she does that I don't, you know, she can mitigate some of that risk on her own just by being extremely valuable to her clients.
But right.
That's always in the back of her head. And I had the steady corporate job. Insurance has always been through my employer and that sort of thing. So that was more than like, I think she's got plenty of faith in me and thinks that, you know, it'll work, but she's just, you know, had to get over some pretty big, you know, mental hurdles, which she's right. Like, we're a good balance because I took a Colby recently, 9 quick start.
Ah, nice.
9 quick start.
Yeah. Join the club here. Nice.
That was a high five if you're just listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get slapped or anything. That was high five.
She's coming along. She's starting to see, hey, look, this real estate thing that you're doing that I encouraged you, by the way, to do is starting to be successful.
Yeah.
Sure, you can pick up the kids. That is something I want you to do. You've got, you know, 8-10 years worth of catch up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
and so, like, you know, I'll sit back. So these things are happening. I think we've already sort of alluded to it. You've put in a notice.
Yes. Finally, it's been about a month. I'm still hanging around because I just want to make sure that I don't totally abandon my boss and my colleagues. But yeah, I'm in the process of transitioning full time to real estate. And
all right. So how does that feel?
Amazing.
when it feels
there's
amazing,
a big smile on his face. Yeah.
You told us right pre-show there was something that kind of made all this happen. Explain that.
Yeah.
Because there's always that moment. There's this time where we're standing on the edge and we're looking over, and I refer to this when we're down at the lake and my kids get up on these top docks, they get up to the little cliffs and look over, and they're really nervous, and you know, and you just tell them, like, if they don't go, they're going to come back down and it's going to be bad. There was a moment your feet are on the edge and you're starting to look.
Yeah. So, so Lindsay travels for work all the time, and she was, sourcing one of her clients' incentive trips in Southern California, which is,
oh, that's tough.
Yeah. No,
this time of year, I was rough. Yeah.
And she, as part of that, she'll, you know, have to go visit hotels and do her homework and everything. And normally she has a business partner who, she actually sits in Atlanta, but normally they do those trips together. And because they were so busy with another event that they were planning, nobody could go with her. So she's going to have to go by herself, which neither she nor I like to happen. So she kind of last minute said, would you want to go with me? It's like Santa Barbara, California. Ooh. Yeah. Let me
check my schedule.
Yeah. And it was right at she and I had already agreed within the household that I was leaving my job soon, but I hadn't really taken the leap yet. And that was just kind of a moment like, okay, this is something I can do. I mean, it's awesome to go to California on a essentially free business trip anytime. But I was like, this is an example of what's possible by, you know, kind of controlling my own destiny, is I can take advantage of, and she's been going on these trips for years that I haven't been able to go to, because it's like, well, how many vacation days do you have left? And before that, I was at a law firm that didn't give vacation days. I was just like, all right, if you're going to be behind on your billable hours and you think you can, that's the way it was described to me. It's like, if you think you can take time off, then you go ahead and take time off.
The old guilt.
Yeah.
Laying that one. So you're sitting on the edge of the cliff and you're like, jump.
I jumped. Yes.
How did it feel?
Felt amazing.
Well, actually, hold on. I have a deeper question.
Okay.
You're on the trip. Does it feel weird?
A little bit. Like a good weird. But yeah. Yeah, it did. I was like, it's a Monday morning. And I'm just like,
this is not how my last week was.
Yeah. Yeah. Or really any week that I've had recently.
And this trip, though, it brought all this to a head.
Yeah, because it was kind of a last minute deal, and I got back, and my boss was like, "Where have you been?" I'm like, "Well, I guess we're having this conversation now."
Fast forward.
Yeah, and so that conversation happened, and I have a lot of respect for my boss and the company, the owner of the company that I'm leaving. If I was going to stay a corporate employee, like, that's where I would want to work. So all those caveats aside, I'm really excited to be turning the page and moving forward.
So how does life look different going forward with that in mind?
It's a lot more to juggle, a lot more. So we've been buying rental properties. I'm also teamed up with another investor who I've kind of known for a little bit, but really it's a new venture. We're building a wholesaling business as well. And so we're just kind of running wide open. And you think back to the early days of building a business, like, that's what we're in right now. But then also, like, I'm coaching softball and soccer and, like, taking to birthday party. Like, I'm doing so many more different things. And it was almost kind of a cop-out having a 9-to-5 job. Like, I'm sorry, I gotta be in the office. And so now I don't have that crutch anymore.
So here, I don't know, and this just came to me, and this may be a bad analogy, but I think about it because Joey and I homeschool. Well, that's not really a fair statement. Joey and I's wives homeschool our children, and it is, you know, I talk to them, and I'm like, oh, how was your day? Oh, it was great. What time did you guys get started? We started about 8:30. What time did you guys finish? Oh, 12. Because there's always something going on in the afternoon that they're going, doing events and taking kids' activities.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you guys got done in like 3.5-4 hours. That's amazing. Most kids are in school for 7 hours.
Yeah.
And more I've learned about it, there's a lot of wasted time at a school system. And I get it, because I mean, you're hurting thousands of kids around. So I'm not trying to be negative in that context, but you can be much more efficient when you're at home. I almost equate going to this 9-to-5 job is very similar, right?
It is.
Like, really, how much focus time is happening in our jobs versus how much is wasted? But like you said, I have to be here between these hours. Like, I have to show up at 9. I have to leave at 5.
Yeah.
But yet now, when you're your own business owner, you're a real estate investor, specifically as your business owner, you can be very specific with the time that you're engaged in the practice and still give yourself time to do some of these other activities. It should be more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what I've cut out is like 2 hours of water cooler football talk.
Right.
Like, which is fine. I do like some water cooler football talk, but like, spending 8 or 9 hours, I guarantee I was not getting as much done as I do, like, you know, juggling, like, okay, I've got a 30-minute window here. Let me call back this, you know, motivated seller to check on a possible deal, or like drop by the property manager's office or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I'm fitting in, and I haven't even really fully engaged yet, but I can just kind of see the glimpses of life as an entrepreneur, which are totally new to me. But it's exciting. I mean, I thrive in chaos, apparently, is what they told me. If you're a high quick start, which
like, you love it. You love change.
I guess so.
This is not something that you're scared of. You're jumping in. Well, man, we've gone through a lot, and I appreciate you listening to this story, because Tao is one of those that has contributed to the show many capacities. He's been in the community. He's shared his specific numbers that he's done in real estate transactions. I love the fact that you're back here, even though Joey and I messed up the last time we were doing this podcast. But it's these stories that motivate you as a listener to go, man, I can do this too. And also, I think it's just knowing there's sometimes, man, we love our job, and one of our previous guests was a W-2 entrepreneur, and she just partnered with a team member at home that was helping her.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where you know that there is opportunities. And I'm so excited to hear, that some of the next times we talk, when you are full on, you now have completely finished that other transition. And I really appreciate the fact that you did. It just shows how of a stand-up guy you are, and that you don't want to leave people hanging. And that's what's going to help you be a good business owner. It's going to help you be a good, landlord, or whatever the proper term is in that world, because you care about people. So thank you, Joey. What else do you want to end with as we wrap up our time with Tom?
I just hope, just like what you said, I'm just going to reiterate, like, you may not know where to start. And so we want to share stories that are successful of people that did say, you know what, I'm interested in something, and they go down a path. And then you can see in just a few years or less, they've gotten what's on the other side of that, right? What is that freedom that they were seeking? It may not be rental properties. Like, Tao went down that road, as you heard, and has done an amazing job. It may be some other form of doing that. But what we want to do is consistently inspire you to take control. That was one thing that I took away from today. Take control. Don't just accept that, man, I've got to stay in this 9-to-5. There's no other option. I think that's the mindset that so many people are in jail to. And how do we get out of that? We have to question that and say, I'm going to take back control. I'm going to pick a path. And it may not, like I said, it may not be rental property, maybe something else. And hopefully we're giving you tons and tons of options to go down that road, and then get there as fast as you can, right? Tao is an extreme example, in my opinion. But if we can do those three things, imagine what's on the other side of that.
When you say that, I want to finish with this, because this is a great thing. And I hadn't done the math, but I'm going to pull out my iPhone real quickly. We can do that. I said it was like 13,600, right? That's a monthly number times 12. That's $163,000. In a traditional investment world, where you were prior, right, Tao, do you have any idea how much money you would need in an account to spit out $163,200 every single year and have a roughly 90 to 95% chance that you would have it at the end of 30 years? You still have a dollar left in that account. Do you have any idea?
It's a big number. I don't know.
Stallion, you
heard it. You heard it here first. It's a big one.
I told you I was a number.
Stallion, you want to guess at that number?
I can't do that in my head. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's 4.6 million.
4.6 million. We interviewed Wade Fowle on our podcast. He's one of the that's done most of the research on the safe withdrawal rate out of an investment account over 20, 30 a year period of time. And he said, now with where interest rates are, it used to be 4% was the withdrawal rate. Now he'd say, I would back it down to 3.5 to give you a 90 to 95% chance that you still have a dollar left in that account. So if you started with 4.6 million, you take out 3.5% out every single year at the end of 30 years, you got a 90 to 95% chance you still have a dollar left in that account. How long do you think it's going to take you and your wife to get 4.6 million?
Well, it's a river.
No, when you were prior to your real estate days.
Yeah, I mean, that you're talking about a lifetime. Of
lifetime. Earning. You would have had to work for the next 30, 40 years, saving a ton of money to get to this point. Just so then hopefully you could spend the last 20 or 30 years of your life. But what you have done is created that stream of income in how many years?
Two. Almost two.
And now you get to enjoy the time where your kids are young.
That's right.
To do these things, to coach the softball,
to take them to carpool, have those funny stories once you pick them up, because you know what's coming out of that school, what they're talking about. It's just comical, the things our kids say. These are those moments. I just love what you just said, Joyce. How do we get there faster?
Yeah.
And finding a way to financial freedom is when we get to the point where our income is greater than our monthly expenses, and it's not about accumulating a number that's so astronomical. Most of us go, man, it would take me a lifetime and I would never even get there. So I'm going to end with that. Thank you so much again, Tal, for coming and spending time with us.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. This is the place where you can take control. You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.